Well, good afternoon, everybody, and what an afternoon it is. Boy, I'll tell you, I didn't know what was going to happen. I was optimistic about Trump winning, but because of 2020, I wasn't sure. And last night, I went to bed around 12 and thought, this looks great, but am I going to wake up and find out the ballot counting stopped at 3 in the morning and we don't know who the president is? Is it going to be a repeat? And it looked like it was going to be harder for it to be a repeat because the numbers were coming in so big for Donald Trump. But I'm just very happy. I'm thanking God. I'm really thanking God. Last night I was, this morning I was. My wife actually did wake me up at 2 in the morning, so I got to go flip around the channel, see the meltdown that was happening on some networks. And it is good. I mean, there's an entertainment factor to it, but it's good when people who hate your way of life and hate the God you serve and all the rest are freaking out and they're worried about what's going to happen as far as their own policies going down the tubes and Donald Trump's and the Republican Party's gaining sway. And so I saw some of that. And then I watched Trump's speech, and I'll give you some thoughts on that. But really optimistic about everything that happened. And the GOP controls the Senate now, it looks like. And things are just going in, nationally at least, a better direction than they had been before. Now, I'm not naive. I'm not looking at this like an American revival of some kind or a spiritual revival of some kind necessarily. I'm looking at it for what it is. The Democrats pushed really, really hard. And this is the backlash against that. And I'll go into why I think that. But this was too big to rig. And I didn't know if that was possible. I thought my suspicions and my confidence in the Democrat Party's ability to rig things was pretty high. And Donald Trump exceeded those things, which I'm very happy about. I've been actually driving through many states the last few days, and I've only seen Trump signs. My wife said she saw a few in Cookeville, Tennessee, which I didn't notice. But from Pennsylvania to Ohio to Indiana to Kentucky to Tennessee, and obviously Pennsylvania, swing state, the rest being red states, but I only saw Trump signs. I was kind of blown away by that, and a lot of them, and creative Trump signs. In fact, yesterday I was driving in, this was actually in the morning, so I was in Cookeville, and we were about to leave. I'm at my brother's house right now, and heading east. And on the way, I noticed there was a sign that said, "Vote Harris." And I thought, oh, there it is. There's the first one. And right next to it was this huge sign saying, "Just kidding, vote Trump." And I thought, she's a joke. They're comfortable putting up a sign that says "Vote Harris" just to make a joke about it because they know no one's doing it, at least in Cookeville, Tennessee. So I was encouraged by that. And I'm assuming many of you are encouraged this morning. And it's good to be encouraged. I mean, I think I'm going to probably go buy some steaks and just, I mean, that's what do you do to celebrate, right? That's one of the big things for guys, at least, right? We like to get some red meat, and I'm going to find the finest steaks I can find, and we're going to grill them up and just have a good old time. But I want to talk about a bunch of things in this particular podcast, including the new coalition that's forming. We're entering new territory. We really are. And the conservative movement, if you want to call it that, even the, I think, Christian evangelical movement is changing quite a bit in a lot of ways. And I can't comprehensively go over all the ways that I'm seeing it change. But I think last night there was a shift, and I want to talk about that shift a little bit and what we should be thinking about and what we should be doing in a practical way moving forward and what we can do that's helpful for the future of our country, the future of our children and grandchildren and so forth. So, I saw last night, going back to last night in the election, a lot of meltdowns happening. I think the Young Turks was the most entertaining of those meltdowns because Cenk, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, I think it's, or Cenk Uger, but he had behind him, it was like a train track in an urban setting, and there was fire everywhere. And I noticed a number of the other anchors had fire in the back, like cities burning. And I'm like, what message are they trying to send? But he was just going crazy. And of course, Jen Psaki had I think it was a tweet this morning that's going around everywhere where, or no, not a tweet, sorry. It was it's in tweets, but she was declaring Trump to be the winner. It was the moment, I think, on MSNBC that Trump was declared the winner. She had the the privilege, but she didn't consider it that, of announcing that particular fact. And then, of course, she goes on this whole rant, highlighting all the things she hates about Trump and his career. And there's a lot of that. There's going to be montages, I'm sure, by this afternoon that have a lot of different people having meltdowns. And I think this is significant. I think it reminds me of 2016 to some extent. I think when the people who have been enemies of the truth, of the good, the true, and the beautiful, really, of God and his order, the most aggressive enemies of God and his order, and the people who represent that, meaning Christians in the United States, I think that there is cause to be emboldened. There is cause to celebrate. There is cause to be excited that the potential pitfalls that the enemy was planning for us have failed. And that's only by the grace of God. I don't care how much human effort went into this, and there was a lot of human efforts. Obviously, I care that human effort went to it, but as far as giving credit, ultimately, it doesn't really matter how much human effort went into it if God was against it, right? We know this as believers. God obviously is giving us some kind of a reprieve. He's giving us 4 more years of some freedom, a safety net. I know for being in New York, this is huge, because New York passed, I think it was called Proposition 2. I voted against it, but it's an insane law. Go look it up. It's not even a law, actually. It's an amendment to their constitution. I don't know how many other blue states had similar measures. I think some of them did. Someone told me some state in the Midwest, it must have been Wisconsin or Minnesota or Michigan, had a similar measure. But in New York, it was this. There was an anti-discrimination, quote unquote, clause that they were adding to their very state constitution. And it was so expansive, it did not just include the LGBTQ panoply. It also included abortion status. It also included immigrant status. And the way you read this, it could definitely be interpreted by lawyers to mean that if you spoke out against abortion, and specifically if you talked against abortion, spoke out against it, and applied it to a particular person, like you said, an individual should not get an abortion, or it was wrong for them to get an abortion, that kind of thing, you'd be in danger of a hate crime. I mean, this is the kind of thing that's happening in deep blue states. And it's scary for people who live there, and I'm one of them, currently at least. And this gives us a safety net. This gives us a reprieve. This gives us at least the satisfaction and confidence that on a federal level, if something like that went to court, that we have a Supreme Court that's hopefully going to make sure that those state laws and state constitution amendments aren't applied in manners that actually do suppress our freedom to worship God and freedom to spread our religion, etc. I think, you know, having Donald Trump in there obviously gives us an opportunity to appoint more Supreme Court justices that will reinforce that kind of thing. So if you live in a deep blue state and there's tyranny on the horizon, at least you have that security, that buffer, that there is a system of adjudication. With Kamala Harris, I knew if that amendment got passed in New York and Kamala Harris was the president, it's just a matter of time. You know, you might have some court cases where this amendment is applied, but eventually the numbers aren't going to work. You're going to have too many judges on the federal level who decide to uphold a measure like that. And I think, you know, at least I have some confidence that we've bought ourselves some time. And that's huge. That's a big thing. That's a good thing. So anyway, I saw these meltdowns. And one of the things that I noticed right away, I was very curious, of course, for this platform, right? Talking about evangelical and specifically, you know, big evangelical influencers that push the needle for social justice. I'm talking about Matt Chandler and J.D. Greer and David Platt and a whole bunch of other people, Russell Moore, David French, Karen Swallow Pryor, Beth Moore, I could just go on and on and on, Eric Mason, Thabiti Anabwile, you know, a lot of the guys I would say at Nine Marks, a lot of the guys at the Gospel Coalition, a lot of the guys at Christianity Today, all of these people, more or less on one level, just about, there's a few exceptions, I'm sure, but more or less, they've pushed the needle left for years. And they've done so in, I would say, careful ways at times, subversive ways, sometimes stupid and obvious ways, but depending on the person we're talking about. But they were silent last night. I was going to the various Twitter pages just to see who's weighing in, and there wasn't much. I'm going to give you today who's weighed in, as far as I know, a few of the names that you might recognize. But there's been a lot of silence, and to be honest with you, I even think that's a good thing. For a number of reasons, but a lot of these guys do not understand, it seems, civics and how politics works, and when they weigh in on these things and try to give their gospel-centered view, supposedly, or their Christian view of what political engagement looks like, it's anything but a Christian view. It's a naive view. It's an unhelpful view. It's a view that attempts to ensure that their churches are politically diverse and Democrats are welcome there and feel comfortable, as well as hopefully Republicans, so you can get the widest net possible, but in an urban setting, more or less. But I don't think a lot of these guys were knowledgeable enough to even weigh in on it. And the ones that were ideologically on the left. And the wind is taken out of their sails. The wind is taken out of their sails. And that's not just the doing of a Donald Trump victory. That's the doing of a lot of us. That's the doing of this podcast. That's the doing of Megan Basham's book. That's the doing of A.D. Robles and what he's been doing. And so many of the newer, younger podcasters and pastors who have, in the last few years since 2020, started to create platforms and have been getting on the same bandwagon. That's the doing of Capstone Report and Protestia, and I could just go on and on and on. There's too many names to mention, but that's the doing of a lot of people who have taken time and effort to care about what evangelicals think and how their leaders are misleading them. And a lot of people, and myself included, didn't really need or want the aggravation that comes with that. And there is aggravation that comes with it when you challenge those authority structures, for sure. You're going to be raked through the mud. Just look at what Megan Basham went through this year. You're going to be smeared and told you're a liar and told you're racially insensitive or you're a misogynist, whatever. They're going to smear you in some way. They're not going to represent you. And oftentimes it's passive aggressive, and it's not the way, it's not like a man faces another man where it's very direct. It tends to be indirect and manipulative. And you go through this, and the reward usually isn't all that much. I mean, you take pay cuts I know I've done that. I've taken a large pay cut to be able to spend time researching some of this, writing about it. I'm not complaining, by the way. I think this is what the Lord wanted me to do. And so I'm not a victim. I'm not saying any of that. But I just know it's a sacrifice, and more so for many others. I mean, look at the people that just came out on this David Platt documentary. These are regular average day Joes. They didn't need their names in the limelight. They didn't need anyone to know who they were. And now they're taking a big risk because they're putting their reputation on the line. And if there's backlash, and most of the backlash is probably going to be personal, it's not going to be necessarily public. You're not going to see it. But these are people that have to share a community with people who attend David Platt's church, who own businesses, etc. And they're willing to risk it for the truth, so that you aren't deceived, so that you know that these guys aren't who they say they are behind closed doors, so that their judgment's impaired. Maybe they don't care as much as they tend to make out like they do. And this has been a team effort. And so I just want to say thank you to everyone who's supported this podcast and bought my books and all the rest, because I saw the evidence last night. This is just one little piece of it, but there's not the boldness that I remember in 2016, and certainly not in 2016, but also in 2020, not seeing that same kind of spirit come from evangelical bigwigs. And I have no doubt they probably feel the same, many of them, but they're not saying it. They know that there's going to be backlash, and that's a huge, huge victory. And this was one of the things that threatened the evangelical vote. In fact, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but at one time I know I had said that based on, I think it was 2016 and 2020 results, there was evidence that there was a break happening in the evangelical ranks. Still overwhelmingly Republican, but it was starting to shift. And some of these efforts of guys like David Platt, who wrote the book Before You Vote, which essentially argued, hey, you can vote for these liberal Democrats. And they know, there's a lot of life issues, and they're also supporting certain life issues because they're for racial justice and other things. And that argument's not having the same effect that it used to have. And I'm really happy to see that. I'm really I'm glad we're in the spot that we're in so many ways. It's a good spot to be in. There's always dangers. There's always things to talk about and be concerned with. And I'm going to, honestly, in the coming weeks, I already have a podcast scheduled to talk about something that I see that's potentially could be harmful to some people. And so we're always going to see that. But I'm not one of these guys who's going to make out to you like, you know, everything is a stage for cancer threat, and you must have me to interpret all of these things for you because, you know, I need job security and you need, no, I don't believe that. I think a lot of the work that we've worked toward is having an impact. We need to continue doing it. There's no doubt, because there's still ways in which some of these evangelical influencers are trying to have an impact in a different way, I think in a more indirect way. So I'm going to still expose some of this stuff. But look, you can take a victory lap. If you've been supportive of this podcast, you can take a victory lap. So just wanted to say that. I'm going to get to some of the reactions that were online, but I'm very positive about what I've been seeing. What else? I want to just also say this is a really good thing. Some of the abortion measures. I know that Florida Amendment 4 got a lot of press, and it failed. And we just thank God for that, Florida is... They rejected a policy that would have been expansive for abortion. And then, of course, Arizona, a policy that would have been expansive for abortion also failed. And we're very grateful for that as well. Now, abortion, and I haven't looked into this deeply yet. Apparently, there were other measures in other states, I guess, that did get voted through. So I'm grateful for those two things. In Arizona, I guess the saving grace was there was a very high threshold for this particular law and or a referendum. I don't know how they categorized it. And that threshold was not met. And I think it was like 65% or something. It was somewhere around there. And so the majority voted in favor of abortion. And it didn't matter because the threshold was too high. They couldn't meet it. So there's still concerning things out there. I'm going to talk about that when we get to the new coalition that's forming. But we thank God. We thank God for those two things. And the other thing I would say about abortion, too, is it's not a winning issue for the left compared to other issues. And that's something we can also thank God for. Even though the left really made this the issue of the election, and it is a winning issue for them in many ways, there were other issues that people cared about more. And so you had people who were pro-abortion who broke ranks to vote for Donald Trump, and maybe because of immigration or economic policies or other things. But the net effect of that is you at least have 4 more years of latitude to work on the state level against abortion. And you have the security that there's not going to be a equivalent to Roe v. Wade type law passed on a national level. So that's a good thing. And I think there's other things Trump will probably bring back. There'll probably be, I mean, he had an executive order basically saying that you can't kill a child after the child's born, Mexico City policy, perhaps some defunding of Planned Parenthood. I'm positive that there will be some things on even the national level that can get done in a more anti-abortion direction. So I think that's a very good thing too. And I know a lot of evangelicals care about that, and for good reason. Of course, I think I already mentioned New York Amendment 2. That's more personal for me. That's not a good thing. And that is one of those things you have to consider. If you're in a deep blue state like that, you have a window right now. And in this window, are you going to stick around because, hey, at least on the federal level, I have a safety net? Or are you going to use this time to consider, where should I relocate? Because I see the direction my state's going in. The pendulum will likely shift at some point. And I have the freedom right now, and hopefully the economic prosperity, etc., to make a move. And I'll tell you what, this isn't an advertisement. This isn't, Josh Abitoy didn't put me up to this, but I spent a day with him in Gainesboro, Tennessee. He showed me around the properties they have. He gave me the vision. He talked about what they want to do there socially, politically, how they want to strengthen the community. This is actually so much healthier, and I might make enemies saying this, but I think this is so much healthier than some of the other schemes out there. And specifically, I'm thinking of, honestly, Doug Wilson's stuff in Moscow, and nothing against moving to Moscow, or Moscow rather, but what I would say is this: when you are around people from the internet who appreciate a ministry and they move there, nothing wrong with that. That can be a good thing, but it's a little bit like online dating, and you don't know what you're going to get. You might find out, hey, that person that I liked online, you might find out about me, right? If you saw me in a personal setting, man, I didn't know he was like that. I thought he was a serious guy, man. He's a goofball, or, you know, who knows what people think, but, you realize that the ideas that you build up in your head aren't always accurate, and real life sets in. And so anyway, all that to say, not to pick on Moscow, because I think, look, if I was in that situation, I would want people moving to my town, to my church, to strengthen that area. But you're getting one type of person. You're getting a person who is immediately already putting themselves under a particular hierarchy, right? They're not just moving there for the area. They're not just moving there for freedom. They're not just moving there for politics or social stuff. They're moving there for an entire lifestyle, a church, very specifically, a certain specific leader that they want to be under. Josh is doing it differently. And I think this is actually, if you're going to start out doing something like this, I think this is the healthy way to do it. The very basic threshold that we want the liberties we grew up with. We want the America we grew up with. We want to make sure that our children inherit that. We want economic mobility. We want them to have property and be able to play outside, to live in a high trust society. We want them to be able to express and live their Christianity in a free manner, uninhibited. We want, the jobs available for them, all the things that you want for your children. And this is the place we're going to do it. We're going to make this our stronghold. There's not one particular leader. There's not one particular denomination or church. There's not the bunker mentality or the culty kind of mindset that can often form when it's just one type of person moving to an area. There's a lot of diversity in what Josh is trying to do. And I appreciate that, because so many people have asked me about the Highland Rim Project and just the Ridge Runner Project. And John, do you realize, in fact, one guy, he subscribed to the podcast and everything and kind of had to stop listening because he just thought, I can't abide this. You're going into these deep red areas and you're bringing all these kinds of people that are different. And isn't that going to ruin the area? And I'm tired of seeing, and I get it. I totally get it. I'm tired of seeing Northerners move down south and bring their values with them and all of that. And don't you think this is, this is potential to be a disaster, right? Right? Because you're all hoping to go there and you have a dream. And what if that dream's unrealized or you don't get along? And they've thought through that. Josh has really thought through that. And so he didn't pay me to say any of this. But look, if you're wanting to use this 4 years as a reprieve and you just want to be with some, at the basic level, like-minded people, whether they're Presbyterians or Baptists or, maybe some of them won't even be Christians. They'll just be conservatives who respect Christianity and want to live in a culturally Christian area. You want that kind of an area for your kids, and you want to be with people who want to come in, support and integrate and assimilate into the culture that's already there, consider it. Consider getting on the wait list for the Highland Rim Project in Gainesboro, Tennessee. And you can, I don't know the website, you can probably just go online and type that in and find it. But that's one area. A lot of people are moving to Florida. A lot of people are moving to other places. I'm not telling you to do it, but it's something you want to consider, especially if you have kids. You have a window of opportunity here, and it may not always exist. So that's one very practical, very personal thing that you can think. And maybe it is Moscow, Idaho. It could very well be that. So I'm not telling you not to do that, by the way. I don't want to put a knock on people doing good work in other places and so forth. That's just my personal opinion, though. I think it's much better when you move to an area and it's with the expectation of you're going to be a Tennessean. You're there for the people. You're not there for a particular personality and that kind of thing. Anyway, moving on from that, probably shouldn't have said that, but there you go. That's me. I say what I think. I think that Christianity is still receding. And this is an important thing, I think, to consider. I already mentioned that in the victory speech, Donald Trump didn't thank God. Dana White actually got up there and he referenced karma. Donald Trump did say God bless America, but you know, this was a little surreal for me. I really thought, I mean, it wasn't like super surreal, I guess, but it was a little surprise. I'll put it that way. It was a little surprising that he didn't thank God after the assassination attempts and everything. I just thought that would be the top of his list. Now, he was tired. He was fatigued. I mean, I'd never seen Donald Trump look so old. And I get it. He's been just nonstop, probably not getting sleep and speaking. And hopefully he gets a long, long Joe Biden-length nap. But I really think we're secularizing and we're continuing to secularize. And in fact, the polls seem to show, and was it Steve Dace? I think it was Steve Dace who had said something along these lines. Let me see if I pulled up the tweet. Yeah. Steve Dace said only 22% of the electorate was white evangelical. The smallest turnout of evangelicals Trump has ever had. 26% turned out in 2016 and 28% turnout in 2020. And matches the lowest evangelical turnout since Romney in 2012. He did win 81% of them, but Trump paid no penalty whatsoever for watering down his pro-life messaging, even if it hurt his evangelical turnout. And, you know, that I look at those numbers. I view this a lot differently than some of the abortion abolitionist types, some of whom I appreciate, but some of whom I think have gotten very ideological. And I'm actually very glad that enough people did not listen to them that Donald Trump was able to win. I don't think actually the abortion abolitionist movement, from my perspective, does not have a whole lot of momentum, power, or influence outside of a few very deep red states like perhaps Oklahoma and Idaho. They have more state level influence in places like that, but nationally, like they're not that big of a, I think, threat to the Republican Party and what the Republican Party wants to do. The pro-life movement, larger than them, broadly speaking, anti-abortion movement, we'll say, including the pro-life movement, they do have significant influence. But I think that influence is even waning. And I do look at this differently. I think that Donald Trump, the way Donald Trump works is, and I've been watching this for years, just being in New York and before his political career. I mean, or you watch The Apprentice and you can see this. He's all about making deals. He's all about, and he's a loyal guy. Loyalty is the currency Trump deals in. And so when you have a group of people like the pro-life, anti-abortion, or even evangelical Christian crowd, and they say, hey, we're going to help you get elected, but this is what you got to do for us. Trump has respected that for the most part. He respected that in 2016. And he got a Supreme Court justices who gave us the Dobbs decision. That's a huge victory. I didn't actually think I would probably see that in my lifetime. I didn't know that that was actually possible. Trump got it done. And that's the way Trump is. He makes the deal and then he carries through. More so than any other president in my lifetime, in my opinion. And so Trump had a problem this time around in that abortion, all the polls, and I looked at them. I mean, it's crazy, especially for Gen Z. The polls show that this is not a winning issue for Republicans at all. And the bean counters, I'm sure in his campaign, told him, you're going to do better if you actually start getting away from the pro-life messaging, maybe even signal that you're open to pro-choice. And if you do that, then you can at least appeal to these voters who are pretty adamantly against the pro-life cause. And Trump listened to that. And I think Trump struck a deal with other people. He struck a deal with RFK. I mean, you look at Elon Musk and Joe Rogan. I mean, these guys are, I think they're all pro-choice to some extent. They're not your conservative. They're not typical conservatives. But they were going to deliver him, I think, more votes. And so the thinking with some of the hardcore abolitionist types is we should all withhold our votes if we're against abortion to teach the Republican Party a lesson. And of course, I argued against this very strongly. And I said, look, you do that, this might be the last election. I mean, if you have 4 years of the kind of migration we've seen over the last 4 years, and enough of them are able to get identification cards and you don't have voter ID laws, we become California. And I really believe that. And thank God we didn't have that happen. But if that happened, and if that happens still in the future, you're going to have permanent unrestricted abortion because the Democrats will have permanent majorities. And if it's not the Democrats, it'll be, you know, it'll that liberal thinking will at least be there and will hold sway, the radical end of it. So anyway, I made the case strongly. We have to. You have to vote for Trump, and you have to show him some loyalty on a political level for what he was able to accomplish the last time around, and push the goals where you can, because you can work in a Trump administration. You have latitude to work. You can try to cut deals where it's like, leave us alone in Oklahoma. We're going to push hard to get an equal protection amendment or something. And, you know, that's, you know, try to cut a different kind of deal with Trump, but don't, if the numbers work out that he's going to go with the pro-choicers who are concerned about things like the economy and immigration, and they will deliver more votes for him, that's exactly where he's going to go. And he'll cut the deal with them, and they will get more of their agenda passed. And that's just the way politics works. And I think it was honestly bad that we had a suppressed evangelical turnout. I think that evangelicals now, even though they went 81% for Donald Trump, evangelicals are essentially in the backseat of the car, of the Republican vehicle. They are not backseat drivers. They don't get to call shots, really. They're in the coalition. They have a seat at the table, which they don't with the Democrats. But they do not have the kind of influence that they used to have. And there's reasons for this, but most notably, there's the direction of the entire country. This isn't even just a political thing. This isn't because the lesser of two evils were voted in every election and evangelicals keep compromising and that's how we got here. I don't think that's it at all. I think that there's something far bigger than that happening. There's a general secularization. We're becoming Europe. Go to the Northeast or the Pacific Northwest. See what it's like in those regions. It is very... this is shocking, actually, for people in the Bible Belt. They just don't have a concept of it. But they are so secularized and now paganized because nature abhors a vacuum that you feel the darkness. You just feel, I feel it where I live in New York. It is not Christian at all. And the Catholic, I guess you could say, in that area, influence is so negligible now. You go past these historic churches and it's, you know, rainbow flags or a restaurant or abandoned. And you might have some little evangelical strip mall or, you know, like some church satellite in a strip mall, but not many people are attending. It's nothing like the Bible Belt. And that's the direction, though, the whole country is going in. They're sliding there at different speeds. And this is the conditions we have to do politics in. And in those conditions where evangelicals have a waning influence, and for whatever reason, less of them decided to even vote this election, Republican Party takes note of that. And that means evangelicals get a smaller piece of the pie. They get a smaller reward bag when Republicans get in control. We still get things, but it's not going to be like it used to be. I can see good things about this, but mostly bad. I can see the good things are, you know, the evangelicals that were arising in the ranks were, I think, wanting to steer us into an iceberg, and they wanted to form a new coalition where it wasn't, we weren't, you know, so tied to the Republican Party, and that, you know, the Democrats aren't going to offer you anything. I think they were under the false assumption that if you signaled left, maybe the Democrats would also offer you something, and that's just not true. The Democrats have no use for evangelicals. You either get on the train and go with their entire agenda, and you're okay with it, or you get off. There's nothing they have in return for you. The Republicans do still have things to give to evangelicals. And so we need to work to expand that. We need to work to educate Christians. And most of all, all that's important, but we need to work to ensure that there's good Christian leadership that now a young right-wing demographic, and the young people are mostly still left, but the ones that are ascending in the Republican ranks that are very secular, some of them more pagan. The secular ones, I think, are looking for an answer. They're looking for religion. They're looking for something to fill that void. And when they look at the evangelical landscape, when they look at the J.D. Platts and J.D. Greer's and David Platts, rather, and Matt Chandler's and other megachurch leaders, what do they see? Nothing to attract them. they're being pushed away. So there's an opportunity right now for the for Christians to actually expand into that demographic if they can stop tripping over themselves to signal their support for LGBTQ stuff and same-sex attraction and left-leaning things and you know how much they care about the marginalized, meaning we need socialism and that kind of thing. If they can stop doing that and start signaling more to the right, they will, and it flows naturally from a biblical understanding, they will, I think, expand their influence in politics in the Republican Party. And so it's a win-win. It's a potential for evangelizing and making converts. I'm not saying use this as a, use the gospel as the evangelism strategy. So I'm not saying use this as a strategy to like a draw card that you, we're going to go right because the demographics say that. I'm saying more though that there's people that have been neglected. You use a fishing lure that attracts all kinds of fish. And the evangelicals have been trying to use a particular fishing lure that only attracts or selectively attracts left-leaning people and urbanites and so forth. And there's a whole bunch of fish out there that would bite a lure if it was broader. And if it just be Christian about it. I mean, a lot of these even secular conservatives are operating in very Christian ways with the how they view society and how it should be arranged and how they view morality. And it's a hand in glove, guys, like no brainer. Why do you think Mark Driscoll, of all people, is making the comeback he's making? Because he's doing this kind of thing. And I'm not saying do it exactly like him at all, but I do think that there's this opportunity out there, and just preach the old story the way you used to, and stop with the social justice nonsense. That's really all I'm saying. And there's an opportunity. It's a win-win. You do that, and I think you also start attracting the people who have written you off. So that's free advice, I suppose. Let's see, what else? It's not time to slow down. I wanted to say that. It's not time to slow down. We need to keep moving. This is the beginning, not the end. Obviously, I've already said, look at where you want to live, and then get your 10 or 15 year plan together. Look at where you want to be. Look at the people you want to live with. You want to live with people who are going to support you, good neighbors and all of that. Also though, see where you can get involved politically. See where you can get involved socially. It's time to turn it up, not turn it down. I talked to my wife the other day about this, and I will probably be making some announcements about myself personally in the next year and a half. I'm looking at moving in a certain direction that I think is more needed because I see a leadership vacuum, a severe leadership vacuum. I see severe just stupidity and immaturity in Big Eva. And I don't see enough people coming to kind of fill that void. And I have some plans that I'm forming in my own mind for what even this platform will look like going forward, because people need leaders. They don't just need guys who can do good work cataloging everything that's wrong and being apologists and showing you the error. That is needed. I still think there's more work for me to do in this, but we need some people in very official leadership capacities. I encourage you all to think through that. Think about what God has given you, what abilities and what influence and all that, and where can he put you? We have a window of 4 years to figure that out and to do it. We have a window of 4 years to evangelize. We have a window of 4 years to operate politically. So get busy. That's all I got to say on that. Start voluntary associations or shore up the ones that are already there. There's a lot of voluntary groups, the veterans groups. I think of Sons of Confederate Veterans even, and Sons of, I don't know if they call it Union Veterans, but the equivalent for the North. There's Daughters of the American Revolution. There's those kinds of things. There's also like your I was going to say Boy Scouts. I guess I can't now. Trail Life, there's outdoors organizations, there's sports organizations. There's all kinds of voluntary associations that need to be strengthened right now that will form the hierarchies that we need to resist statism. Get involved in those things as much as you possibly can. I'm not saying to kill yourself, but think of the ways that you can not just be an island and not just be a pew sitter on Sunday and not just go enjoy your hobbies. You should enjoy hobbies, but take some buddies with you, form a group. Hey, if you like, cycling, I like cycling. I've been thinking about this. You know, I should find some people, start a cycling group. That's an opportunity, right? So this is the kind of thing I'm talking about. We have 4 years to do this. And at least, hopefully we have more than that. Maybe, I don't know who would be the Republican nominee in 4 years, but we have 4 years to get some work done. And God has given us this. It is a gift. So as Christianity is receding more broadly, I think that God is, you know, why, I don't know why God's given us this opportunity fully, but I think it may be that we have an opportunity to trust Him, to pray, to turn this around. So pray about that. Well, man, what else? I want to do a breakdown a little bit of just the new coalition and talk about that briefly. I've already mentioned that I think things are a little more secular, but I think there's more going on. So ethnically speaking, white men overwhelmingly were Trump's demographic. Only 28% of them, or rather 24% of them voted for Kamala Harris. Only 24%. And they make up 28% of the nation's voting, or the country's voting demographic. White women, and I wanted to point this one out specifically. I noticed Lizzie Marbuck on Twitter pointed this out, and she's 100% right about this. You see a lot of guys. I know Joel Berry did this recently from Babylon Bee and Clear Truth Media. But he was, you know, bashing the white women who vote for Kamala Harris and this and that. And I've always been skeptical about this. I think, yeah, there is a white suburban woman person that I guess, you know, like PureFlix markets to and the Gospel Coalition markets to and so forth. But I still thought, you know, white women as a demographic are overwhelmingly still Republican. And yeah, they're not like the men, but they're still Republican. So white women, they make up 29% of the demographic that voted, and 31% voted for Kamala Harris. That was it. That was that's the demographic that's, you know, controlling the country? I don't think so. And you have to wonder why picking on white women has become kind of a standard thing in right-leaning social media Christian circles. Because I've seen that a lot. I don't understand it quite. Maybe it's because they're safe to pick on. You can pick on the Karens, right? You can talk about a Karen, and that's acceptable. But you can't do that right for other racial minorities. It doesn't work. So that's my theory of why the white women are picked on. But stop picking on them, because it's not accurate. Black men, they make up 12%, apparently, of the demographic that voted. 81% of them went for Kamala Harris. Black women, they make up 18%. 90% of them went for Kamala Harris. Latino men, they make up 4%. 50. Now, this is interesting to me, and I'll get to this more in a moment, but Latino men, 4%. And they 53% for Kamala Harris. That's interesting. Latino men are kind of split evenly, Trump-Harris. Latino women make up 4%, 59% for Kamala Harris. Now, they are still leaning left. There's still, that demographic is still pretty much every minority demographic. I think it's not on the list, but I've read in other places that Native Americans tend to go Republican. So there's that. But other than that, all the minority groups tend to go hard Democrat for the most part. But there may be some inroads being made here with Latino men, especially. Age-wise, you know, 55% of 18 to 29-year-olds went for Kamala Harris. That's actually not as bad as I thought it was going to be. 30 to 44%, 51% went for Kamala Harris. That's you know, more or less split. And then 45, this is the demographic that won. So it's, you know, white males, but it's this demographic of 45 to 64. So that, what is that? The generation we don't talk about, right? It's between the boomers and the millennials. And Gen X went Kamala Harris, 45%. That was it, 45%. So good on them. And then 65 or over, so the boomers, went 50% for Kamala Harris. So that's interesting to me. I thought the boomers would be much more. I even made a tweet that I'm going to vote with the boomers because I figured they'd be pretty much more for Trump. So that's interesting. So when we talk about religion, Protestant and other, and you know, Christians that aren't Catholic, 27% for Kamala Harris, right? And they make up 30% of the voting demographic. Catholics make up 15%, 37% of them for Kamala Harris. So Catholics, this is one of the things that's interesting to me. The conservative movement is controlled mostly by Jewish people and Catholics. And Jewish people make up 2% of the voting demographic. 80% of them went for Kamala Harris. 80%, overwhelming. For Catholics, 37%. So they're mostly conservative, but still nothing like the Protestants. The Protestant, when Stephen Wolf said, what was it, over a year ago, that it was the Protestants, or it was a white Protestants, that demographic is the bulwark. He was 100% right, and he got so beaten up for it. His own publishing company, Canon Press, said this is stupid, and James White went after him, and I mean, there was all kinds of backlash he got. He was 100% right. All the voting numbers I'm looking at right now back that up 110%. It's Protestants, and it's mostly, and it's white people, mostly white men. That's the voting demographic that is keeping, that is the moral conscience of the country. And Jewish people, 80%, that's crazy to me, 80%, that's higher than the nuns. The nuns, they mean no religious affiliation, 72%, no surprise there, for Kamala Harris. Jewish people, 80% for Kamala Harris. It's the highest of any religious group. White born again or evangelical Christians, 81% for Trump, and only 17% for Kamala Harris. So that's some of the breakdown. Among Hispanic women, Harris underperformed slightly. In 2020, nearly 7 in 10 Hispanic women backed Biden. This year, about 6 in 10, so 60% of Hispanic women supported Harris. Still, it's more than, you know, but it's not as much as voted for Biden. In Ohio, union households, this is another thing, made up about 1 in 6 voters, according to early exit polling, and about roughly 6 in 10 supported Trump. So union households veering towards Trump, which is different. So we have a new coalition forming. And this new coalition, according to these exit polls, it is primarily white people, evangelical Christians, Protestants. That's what makes up the core of this demographic. But the momentum, the shifting is happening. So you have, on an economic level, union households that are now making up, starting to make up more. And there's a shift in Latinos, it looks like, starting to veer more towards, I don't think it'll ever, I could be wrong, but I don't think it'll ever, they'll be fully Republican. But there's a shift happening in that direction. So that's interesting to me. I would say less pro-life than they have been in the past. That was revealed since the Dobbs decision, really. And I think we were there, but we didn't know it. There was so much propaganda in the pro-life movement saying we're the pro-life generation and all this kind of stuff. It just wasn't true. That's really, we peeled the bandage back and we saw how bad the wound was on that stuff. So there's an overall, this is what I want to say. There's a secularization happening and the battle lines are very much becoming, I think they're going to be less religious, even though that's still very much there, but I think that's waning. And I think it's going to be more based upon racial and ethnic identity. Regional identity is going to factor into that obviously as well. But you know, when you have union households who usually vote Democrat for economic reasons, and they voted Democrat forever, you have West Virginia now, they have their senator, Jim Justice flipped. He went from Democrat to Republican. The lines that were there before were Democrats really had a coalition of white people, also a working class whites. That coalition's gone. They're all in the Trump camp now. That's the new realignment. And we also have a bunch of kind of soft liberals in that camp. We have the Elon Musks. We have the RFKs now, who want to get stuff done because they think the radical left went way too far. So they're in that camp now. And so this presents an opportunity, but also a threat. You want their support, but you don't want them in the driver's seat. So who is in the driver's seat makes a lot of difference. We're going in a good direction when it comes to, I think, a rejecting the proposition nation and understanding that we need to have an America first kind of agenda. I think if that's taken to its logical conclusion, that actually will eventually mean more pro-life policies, just because if you're about your people, you have to start thinking, hey, our people are being killed in the womb and that kind of thing. But I could be wrong on that. But I think there's some good things happening in that direction. But this is what I'm seeing. And I didn't even give you the stats on the college educated stuff. But obviously, like it usually is, you know, the more college educated people went for Harris. So it is a working class white, and now with a slightly growing Latino presence, and, you know, Protestant, but also kind of like secular alliance of people. That's what you have now in the Republican Party. That's the coalition. And that is a different coalition than we used to have. And it's more social policies and economic policies, I think, that are making the difference. You know, I remember my uncle had said this years ago, that I think this was like during Romney. He said, look, we're at this tipping point. You have enough people on welfare. They're going to vote for the Democrats because they want to expand welfare. And the deep state is so big, you know, they're going to vote for their own interests. That's true to an extent. There's no doubt that's true. But what we're finding out is there's actually things that people care about even deeper than that. There's people who are teaching ESL, for example, who realize a Harris victory means more job security for them. But they still want Trump to win because they want their children to inherit the kind of America they grew up in. I think that's making the big difference. I think that it's people, even the Elon Musk wants, he's not a Christian, and he wants a Christianity that's aggressive, that's willing to fight, that takes offense when the Last Supper is mocked. I mean, that's a difference. I mean, these people who didn't live a Christian lives at all are waking up and realizing that a world without Christianity is not the world they want for themselves or their kids or their grandkids. That's a shift. They see the importance of having that. They see the importance of having a moral standard somewhere. So obviously this creates an opportunity, but it also creates liabilities. So this could go in many different directions. And a lot of it hinges on, are there going to be Christian leaders who rise in the ranks, who make stands, who are able to talk, and they're taken seriously because they mean what they say. I'm talking masculine leaders. We don't produce those in Big Evil World, but we're going to need to produce them. And not jerks, by the way. This is very important for me to say this. Masculine leaders who are not jerks, who are not immature, who have the best interests of their people, their country, their church, their, you know, all of that in mind, and set a good personal example. It's not going to be your Mike Pence's. It's not going to be your kind of cookie clean, I'm squeaky clean, but I'm not going to fight when it really matters. It's going to have to be people who fight when it really matters and have a priority and respect the order of Mars. And that's the order of loves is what people are waking up to in so many different areas in Christianity. And broadly speaking, the electorate's waking up to that, I think. I think that's a lot of what's going on. Now, you could say that the pro-life stuff doesn't reflect that. I get that. But I think that a lot of people think of the abortion issue in terms of like, well, if other people want to do it, this is wrong, obviously. If other people want to murder their kids, that's what it is. I'm not going to do it for mine, though. I want the best for mine. But if other people want to get married, if they want to have a gay marriage, you know, that's fine. Hopefully, though, people will start connecting dots and they'll realize, hey, these moral issues actually, when other people do them, it does affect me. I live in New York and I can see that every day. No, yeah, the idea that this was just letting people do their own thing is wrong. I mean, it's enshrined now. It's in murals that you have to pass by and your kids ask questions. The PDA is now public with homosexuals. I mean, I have to explain to my kids these kinds of things in the future. And it brings the moral bar from your society down. And in places where that hasn't taken root yet, people can't see it. But as that happens, I think people will. All right, we're almost an hour in, so I wanted to make the podcast an hour, so I got to land the plane soon. So here's, as promised, some of the reactions from some big evil leaders, right? So Soon Chan Ra, a professor of evangelism at Fuller, he's on the board for, what's the organization that, oh, now I'm blanking on their name, World Vision. He's on their board. He posted this on Facebook. Stress eating, dumplings and ice cream, also looking for a potential job in Canada. So I'm sure Canada would love to have you, Soon-Chan Ra. And then we have J.D. Greer, who said congrats to Donald Trump and J.D. Vance, much to be hopeful for. We will be praying that you lead in ways that protect liberty and life and promote peace and justice for all, praying for God to prosper you, give you wisdom and strength. Now, I want to say something about it. I'm glad J.D. Greer, by the way, said this. J.D. Greer is no fan of me, by the way. He does not like me, not one bit. Neither does Neil Shenvey, who goes to his church. I don't get that impression. But J.D. Greer has, in the past, signaled pretty hard against Trump, and certainly against, you know, America First policies and that kind of thing. The fact that he feels the need to congratulate Donald Trump today, and this is very nonpartisan, but he's got people in his, you know, commenting under it all over the place saying, basically, how can you do this as a member of the Summit Church? Because you've marinated these people in social justice for so many years. Of course, they're surprised that you're coming out and doing this because it's off script. And the fact that he feels the need to kind of go off script to correct, because, you know, Megan Basham is really traced him down and nailed him down. I think he feels the need. He's got a signal right somehow. And this is probably as far as he can go, but this is what he's doing. And I'm here for it. I'm here for it. Never would recommend his church, but I'm here for it. This guy named, now Ben Marsh, is Ben Marsh Big Eva? Most people don't even know who I'm talking about unless you're on Twitter. And even then you probably don't. But, I'm kind of thin in the ranks as far as trying to find reactions because most of these guys aren't reacting at all. But Ben Marsh, I thought it was funny. He was having a meltdown. He's a pastor in North Carolina. I think it's North Carolina. He said, there are no words to say to young men to constraining their abuse of women now. I guess men are going to abuse women now. You can be president. Rape away, young man. Bitch your bitcoins. Revel in your power. Abuse the women all you want, and why not? Wither morality. It is dead. Wither virtues. Now he's going all King James on us. It does not matter. Winning alone is the standard of virtue and morality. Provided you win, add zeros, take the women, and we will still call you a Christian if you run for office. All right, well, eat your heart out, Ben Marsh. That's, I don't think for the record that Donald Trump is, he's not given evidence that he is an evangelical Christian, but he does respect some form of cultural Christianity, and for that, we are thankful. Him raping, I'm not so sure about that. I don't think so, but Raymond Chang. The question Republicans need to ask themselves is do they want MAGA to define them? Or if they want to be the principled conservatives that many of them claim to be. MAGA is right-wing extremism that has become a fundamentalist norm for the right. That's the funny thing about this. MAGA is not extremism. America First is, we are actually so magnanimous, so welcoming, so diplomatic, so easygoing in this country. I can't believe how welcoming and expansive we are and inclusive we are with all the people that we allow to come here and call themselves American and reap the benefits of America. And we just want the people who live here to be benefited by the policies of our own government. Is that too much to ask? I mean, that's extreme though. The Democrat Party has an opportunity to find a way, he says, to expand its base by becoming more expansive as a party and moving away from a leftist fundamentalism. I think you will see this. I think you will see the Democrats. I don't know. I don't know for sure. I mean, they got a really hard left base. We'll see. But you're going to see Democrats, some of them, I think, trying to be more subversive. Gavin Newsom, for one, I think, is going to try to steer more moderate. And you'll see that even with his policies, I'm sure, in California. Jamar Tisby, this moment, he says, I'll just, for kids, I don't know if parents want them hearing this word, but I'll say this moment stinks, all right? He says, it feels like we're entering into a new nightmare, and I want to take every we will resist and we'll get through this and hurl it against a wall. I am tired. Well, good. Jamar Tisby, I hope you don't work towards suppressing evangelical conservative votes ever again. That would be nice. David French is blaming Biden this morning for everything. You know, Biden didn't get out early enough. And so he praised Biden when Biden got out, but now he's blaming Biden for not getting out sooner. So Christianity Today ran a piece 2 days ago, the evangelical voters who changed their minds and encouraging people really to vote for Harris. And now they have to eat some humble pie because Donald Trump is president and they obviously had to run a piece about it. This is what I'm seeing. I'm seeing the people who are weighing in, who are more from that evangelical kind of social justice lane are obviously discouraged, are trying to place blame, are they're jaded, and it's a wonderful thing that they are feeling that way, because them winning this would not have been good at all. So in closing, I'll just say this. I think that in Big Evil Land, you are going to see, I think J.D. Greer is a good example of this, folks who are going to start trying to veer more moderate sounding, or you know, they're going to hide their leftist tendencies. I think this has already been happening at places like Southern and Southeastern Seminary. In fact, I just talked to someone connected to Southern Seminary, and he told me, he goes, it's worse than you realize, John, at Southern Seminary. And he's like, they're just suppressing it. They're not talking about it. But the social justice stuff is still there. So for, you know, throw that out there for what it's worth. I've been told the same about Southeastern and other places, but I think that there's going to be more of an intentional effort to suppress that stuff being made public. And you're going to see guys, Clint Presley's even a guy like this, right? The president of the Southern Baptist Convention, who was, you know, advocating for the illegal migration and all of that. And now he's, you know, he wants to signal more to the right. You know, really, Willie Rice, to his credit in the SBC, admitted he was wrong. And I respect him for that. There's very few people willing to do that. Like, hey, I was on the left, I realized this is wrong, and now I'm not. But I think you're going to see more. The momentum politically is in that direction, and they realize a lot of people are that way. And so in order to keep power, I think a lot of big evangelicals are just going to be neutral sounding, or you may, you know, they're trying to spin things so you hear what you want to hear. So just be skeptical of that. Realize that's probably going to be out there. And then you're going to have a group of evangelicals. Jamar Tisby is definitely one of these guys who they just break with the tribe they were at before. You know, they're not speaking at Southern Seminary. They're not at Covenant College. They're not at RTS anymore. They're forming coalitions with Sojourners. They're, you know, Thibidi Anabwile, those kind of guys. I mean, they're going to be with the Jim Wallace types moving forward, because that's where they are. They're not, you're going to see less of them with the Nine Marks types, more of them with the Jim Wallace types. That's my prediction on all of this. So the hardcore ideologues, not the pragmatic ones who thought they could use social justice to expand the ranks of their churches and so forth, but the ideologues who really believed in egalitarianism, they are gone. They're now probably going to be less relevant than they used to be, but that they found their tribe, and their tribe is the traditional mainline Protestant left. So I think even this is all good. The important thing, though, is not to let the people who steered us into icebergs get back into the steering wheel, at least not without a lot of time and them admitting that they were wrong and that kind of thing. Be thankful when people signal towards the right, but we need a new crop of leaders who can take the steering wheel and will do it in very competent ways. And that's one of the things that I'm dedicated to working toward over the next few years. And one of the ways that, you know, if you want to work towards that with me, you can pray. You can also support me on Patreon. It's Patreon. I'd never plug the Patreon, but this is a good opportunity for it. Patreon.com/, I think it's Worldview Conversation. Or you can go to johnharrispodcast.com and go to the donate tab. I think it's donate. And you can find the link there. Partner with me there. I'm going to have more exclusive Patreon content coming soon, and this is one of the things that I'm going to, and I give you a behind the curtain view of things often. TruthScript, another organization that I'm involved in, we have a conference. I mean, I'll announce it now, to be honest. It's the last full weekend of April. It's going to be near Lancaster, Pennsylvania. It's Christianity and the Founding Conference. I think the website is christianityandthefounding.com, or maybe it's christianityandthefoundingconference.com. Try one of those. I forget which one it is. You can sign up. It's only $30, and we got some great speakers coming. But my goal with the events that we're going to be doing with TruthScript is I'm going to be putting leaders in front. I'm going to be putting pastors in front of you also. Some of these guys you may never have heard of, but these are going to be the guys also who I think can competently lead us. And there's a lot of guys I know who fit the bill. They just don't have the platforming. TruthScript is going to be all about that. So, hey, if you want to help us, it's going to be as big or as little as you want it to be, as the Lord wants it to be, but as he uses you as a means. So that's 501c3. Go to truthscript.com, scroll down to the bottom and donate if that's something you're after. I realize a lot of people were giving to this Trump campaign, and now you can rest easy. You're not giving to that anymore. Consider the organizations that are working to build the future, and that's what we're trying to do. So God bless. Those are my reactions to the election. Very happy. And there will likely be more podcasts coming later this week. But just wanted to let you know what I'm thinking and how I'm thinking about the results last night. God bless.
Ohio seniors, make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. Enroll by December 7th.